Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Nucleus Investment Insights. The topic for today is ethical investing and its impacts. We're going to look at some different definitions for ethical investing. Then we'll look at the effect on portfolio performance. Next, we'll show you what your options are for ethical investing. And lastly, we'll identify some of the pitfalls. My name's Sam Kerr, and I'm the Senior Advisor at Nucleus Wealth, and I'll be the host of the show for today. As always, we've got Head of Investments, Damien Klassen. Damien, how are you going?
Very well, Sam.
So it's good to hear.
Worth saying as well, this one will be airing, you know, a couple of days before New Year's. So, you know, if you've any New Year's resolutions for people to add some more ethics, or at least reflect some of their own ethics in their portfolio, and I think that's, you know, really what we're trying to hit here is the practical uses of ethical investing as opposed to, you know, what the moral uses and things like that might be.
Okay, excellent. So just a quick reminder before we get started. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and click the bell to be notified when we go live or have a new episode recorded that you can watch. Alternatively, follow us on your preferred podcast platform. Our show is available on all the majors. So now that we've got that little bit of housekeeping out of the way, Damien, I'll hand it over to you to start things off.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Sam. What I wanted to do is first start with just some of the terminology that gets thrown around, because there's lots of different sort of facets of ethical investing, and sometimes it can be confusing and, you know, perhaps intentionally so. But you know, really getting a feel for what are you getting when you say you want ethical investing, and how does that match up with the portfolios that are delivered? So, some people describe it sort of from light green to dark green, and I've got one sort of path which leads through from sustainable investing to socially responsible investing to ethical investing, with the idea that, you know, sustainable investing at the sort of the light green end is more about how well you're managing these environmental and social and corporate factors. It's not about what the company actually does. It's what they actually make or what they sell. It's more about how they're actually being, how they're interacting with the rest of the world. And so, so that sort of sits at one end. Then you sort of move into sort of more of the socially responsible, where you're going, okay, well, now is the company actually, you know, paying its taxes? Are they giving back to the communities? Are they paying reasonable wages? And you know, those types of factors that sort of get into the socially responsible side. And then you sort of end up at the in the ethical side as well, where it's saying, okay, now you're going to start knocking out companies or sectors that are, and not including them in portfolios if they're involved in making or selling certain products, or vice versa. Maybe you're including stocks because they are selling particular products. So that's sort of, you know, I guess one sort of facet of how people look at ethical investing. I spoke as well about this idea that of environmental, social, and governance, and that's quite commonly called ESG. So which stands for your environmental side. So people will look at the things that companies do in terms of the energy use, waste, pollution. Whether they use whether they're harming the environment in terms of the production or afterwards, and then so that's sort of that's the environmental side. Then you get the social side, which is a lot about that's about sort of how they're managing the relationship with employees, suppliers, communities, and it's really about how you interact with the rest of the world in terms of that side. And then finally you have your governance, which is a factor. We actually think of governance as an investment factor, which we do include inside the investment side. And so that's things like your executive pay. Does the company have the proper internal controls? Do shareholders have the rights and things like that? And we find that generally you can't tie it down for every company, but generally companies with better corporate governance do end up having better performance over the longer term. But that's sort of your so of those three, that's what sort of they combine into to giving you that ESG terminology that you quite often hear.
So, Damien, how long has this sort of ESG framework been around for?
Oh, it's a good question. I think there's certainly for for in some forms, you know, it's been around there for as long as people have been investing in terms of trying to invest in companies they think are making positive impact. But in terms of a you're really seriously attracting money, I think probably the last 15 to 20 years, and certainly the last 5 or so years have been some of the better ones. I think what you find is that when markets have actually had a quite a decent run, then you often get more interest in ethical investing and ESG investing, as opposed to when markets have really sort of had a bombed out. So sort of, you know, I guess a little bit of a sad indictment on human character, I suppose, but it is that part where, you know, I certainly noticed pre the financial crisis. So in 2006, 2007, you got a lot more interest in ethical investing. And then that seemed to die down quite a lot for a few years. And then, you know, we're in the tail end of a quite a long bull market now. And there's obviously a lot more interest. But also as well, you know, there's, I think climate change has certainly made a big impact for a lot of investors in terms of they're seeing that governments aren't doing enough to reach what scientists are saying are the right targets, and people want to be involved in trying to reach, you know, help reach those as well. So and corporates as well, I suppose. So seeing corporates and corporates and individuals wanting to do what they can, you know, potentially because of the lack of leadership in terms of those types of issues.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Yeah. Thanks.
So the next side then, so the only other thing I want to try and define is this idea about how you've decided to go to an investment company to do some ethical investing for you. They tend to do it in three different ways. One is sort of what we call a positive ethical screening. So you're going to go out there and try and find companies that are actually going to make a difference to the world. So whether it be you're looking for ones of, you know, producing clean water or solar panels or you know, things like that are actually where you can look at it and say that, you know, you're going to give this company some money and they're going to make a positive impact. The big problems with the positive ethical investing is that it's hard to find. So, you know, we had a company in our portfolio for a number of years, Vestas Wind Energy, one of the world's largest, you know, producers of wind turbines, and like the company, great performance, you know, keeps growing, but it just got so expensive that it eventually you've just got to sit back and say, well, it's, you know, it's prospects for returns, it's already priced in a lot of success. And so you know, the issue for those companies is you've got to, sometimes you sort of looking at these companies going, well, I actually think this company's overpriced and I think the returns are going to be poor, but so should the fund manager then actually go out and buy that stock anyway because of what they're going to do for the world or for the environment? And so you know, and we'll move on. I'll go a little bit more into that later, but I sort of feel as if you know, investors making a martyr of themselves by losing money on overpriced stocks, you know, really doesn't help the environment. You know, you'd be better off, you know, just investing in stocks that weren't overpriced and donating or going out and buying products, if you really wanted to help. Is that you know, so I've there's positive ethical screening obviously helps with you know, a number of companies getting them off the ground and things like that, but you know, there is a key part about working out whether you're investing to try and make money or whether you're investing to try and further a cause. And if you're trying to further a cause, there's probably better ways you can further that cause. So that's your positive side. The next side is what is often called best of breed, and this is the one that's probably more confusing for people, because what happens is it benchmarks companies versus other companies in the similar sectors. So you'll find that you'll get someone will go, yeah, look, I'm concerned about climate change, and so I want to buy companies that, you know, are going to help us get to net 2% or net zero, sorry, and to limit to 2% or 1.5%. And then the investors turn around and they look at their portfolio and they go, just a minute, I've got Woodside in here. You know, they're a gas producer, and the people running it sort of go, yeah, but Woodside's way better than buying these oil sands companies in Canada, or it's way better than brown coal. And so It's a little, I sometimes find that a little disingenuous in terms of it's, you're sort of looking at companies and you're finding that you're basically trying to say, well, I just want the cleanest of the dirty ones, you know, it can sometimes, I guess it can sometimes feel a little bit hypocritical that you're actually investing in companies that do the thing you don't want, because you've benchmarked them versus other companies. And the other one, a good explanation of one the other day was, you know, you're buying a coal company because it's got the world's best paper recycling program and excellent corporate governance. And you're saying, well, yes, that might be true, but it's still a coal company. And so, you know, the question for that is, you know, the amount of other things companies do, and especially because the companies in the worst sector tend to greenwash as much as possible, or they've got all these policies and procedures and all these things in place to try and, I guess, put the best light on their own performance.
Yeah, Damien, can you just elaborate on that concept of greenwashing a little bit more for those people that don't quite understand it?
Yeah, so there's a number of oil and gas companies. You go to their websites as an example, and you can't even work out that these things actually produce oil and gas. It's all pictures of wind turbines and you know, beaches and pristine landscapes, and you sort of look through, and they talk about all this investment they're doing in renewable energy and gigawatts of this and megawatts of that and all these benefits that they keep giving you. But then you actually look at, you dig into their annual reports and have a look, and the things are doing like 95% coal and oil, and then 5% renewables. And it's the part that companies in a sector that's seen as unfavorable will often try and put the best possible spin on their outlook. And so, and that's what you usually call as greenwashing, or the example I used before of saying, you're a coal company, but so we're going to have this fantastic, thing about how we recycle paper and we don't use it, we don't use paper in the office and all these things like that, as a factor of trying to put a better spin on it.
Yeah, great, thanks. And is this greenwashing, is that prevalent, in
absolutely
companies?
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially, I think the thing we find as well is we deal largely in large cap, mostly in the larger stocks. So the top 1,600 stocks in the world, which is the top sort of 60 or 70 in Australia, is our investment universe and where we pick our stocks from. And the thing with those companies are they are big companies that have got large investor relations departments with lots of people employed in them. They can afford to get, put somebody on the case to go and do some glossy brochures and make up lots of policies and procedures about what they're doing, whereas some of the smaller companies just don't have those same resources, and the smaller companies might be doing a much better job in much better sectors, but they haven't got the same gloss, and so there's almost an inherent bias towards large companies which are doing the greenwashing in terms of making them look better.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that was, and then the final type of ethical investing. So we spoke about the positive ethical screening, the best of breed, and then the final one is the negative ethical screening, and that's where you're trying to knock stocks out of a portfolios because they're in a sector you don't like, or they're producing something you don't want, or they've got too many red flags for corporate governance, or things like that. And so we have a bit more support for the negative ethical screening, but we do note as well that that comes with its own costs, and I'll move a little bit on to a little bit later. We'll talk about what is the cost of ethical investments and what can you expect in terms of returns. But before I get to that, I actually want to start with this idea that you should really be thinking about why you want to invest ethically. So I think some people sort of have an automatic, well, I should do this because it's the most ethical thing to do, and I want to feel good about myself and all that type of stuff. And I have sympathy for that view, but I do want to make sure that you're trying to do it the best possible way, because the reality is you buying a stock from somebody else or selling a stock, you've sold your Woodside shares or sold your shares in Whitehaven Coal, that hasn't done anything to the rest of the market. That's made the tiniest of tiny differences. It's, to me, that's the equivalent of ticking like on an Instagram post or a Facebook post or something like that. Yes, it's vaguely moving in the right direction, but it's really not You know, it's not enough for you to then feel good about yourself and say, okay, I've done my part for global warming because I decided not to buy this, or I've done my part for curing cancer because I decided not to buy tobacco stocks. I think there's a, you know, I put it on sort of four different levels in terms of how you can have the most amount of impact. And for me, that, you know, if you want to make the most amount of impact, make a donation. You know, companies themselves aren't generally aren't tax deductible in terms of donating to companies. But if your cause is ethical, then chances are there's some sort of body out there or some sort of research organization you know, something like that, not for profit, that will actually be tax deductible. So, you know, you say taking $1,000 on a, you know, on a company and losing money on it, and losing half it on a company that's just overpriced and but trying to cure cancer, you're far better off just taking the money and giving it straight to a charitable place and taking a tax deduction up front rather than having to, you know, invest in a company that's going to lose money or need share price going to go down and need to raise later. So that's sort of the first step. That's got the most impact. The second most impact is actually go out and buy the products. Like, so if you're a huge fan, say, of Tesla and the whole electric cars and you know, the idea that that's going to help transition, then buy a Tesla. Don't go buy the stock. You know, if you're going to, you actually buying a car or buying an electric car or something like that makes a much bigger difference than investing in the stock. And all you're doing when you're investing in the stock really is just buying from another investor and pushing the price up. So, you know, companies want more customers rather than more investors. And the companies that want more investors rather than more customers, you don't really invest in those companies. They're the ones that are just, you know, the Ponzi schemes that are just there to bring people, bring money in to pay management salaries and sort of move it on. So, you know, step number one, make a donation. Step number two, if you can't make a donation, you know, get out and buy the product yourself. The third stage, buying shares from a company that's actually doing a capital raising. That helps in terms of, you know, you've got a biotech company trying to cure cancer and they need to raise, you know, $20 million to get through their FDA process or to do the next stage of their research. If you actually go and invest in the company as they're doing those capital raisings, that will then give the company money to go out and do whatever they wanted to do. But if you invest that same amount of money by buying shares on the market, all you're doing is buying from another shareholder and, you know, making a minuscule difference on the price of that company. So yes, so those four parts, I guess, is that I'd like, you know, before you do decide to invest ethically, you know, think about those. And that's why we sort of, well, you know, our philosophy is you do the negative screening, and we sort of, I'll go into later what Nucleus does, but we basically try and let people knock their own stocks out so that you can choose for yourself. But the idea is that, you know, your investment there, you want to make sure you're not making the world a worse place. So by knocking these stocks out and not buying them, you know, I'm not profiting from something that I don't think is an ethical behavior or I don't, you know, I don't agree with. And I'm making sure I'm not making the world worse by investing. But if you actually want to make the world better, then there's other ways to do it. I guess that's probably the nutshell of what I'm trying to say in terms of how that works.
So Damien, you said actually buying the stock doesn't make much impact. But what if a lot of people decided not to buy certain industries like fossil fuels, for example? Is that going to make an impact?
Look, it'll increase the cost of capital for those companies, probably. But the flip side is, does that just mean that there's going to be, you know, let's say these companies are producing a certain amount of cash, and over the next, you know, over their lifetime, they're going to produce, say I've got a company and it's, you know, its value on the market at the moment is $100 million, and it's in this wind down where it's you know, digging the coal out of its coal mine and selling it and giving the profits back to shareholders, and let's say it's going to make so I said the company's worth $100 million. Let's say it's going to make $1 billion of profits over the next 20 years before that's it. So it closes its coal mine down and we're done. Is that if that's what's going to happen in terms of the cash flows and they're going to pay $1 billion back out as dividends, then the company's, you know, worthless at the end of it, then whether you sell the company now and the price gets pushed down And that means people get to buy that company for $50 million in order to get the $1 billion worth of cash flow, or whether you push it up and you push it up to $150 million to get that $1 billion worth of cash flow over 20 years. You really haven't made a difference to the, if they're going to make the profits from doing that, and particularly something like a coal company or something like that is, you know, most likely in rundown, then does it make sense how your decision to buy or sell really hasn't affected the company that much? There might be a little bit of capital cost in there, in that, you know, if too many people go out and buy coal companies, they'll have more money and they'll go and start up new mines, but you know, it's very much at the margin, I guess, is my take on buying or selling the stocks.
Okay, that's interesting. And you know, in the ethical space, predominantly companies, or funds management companies screen out these, you know, fossil fuels, for example. So do you think that's beneficial, or is that just, you know, making people feel good about how they're perceiving to invest their money?
I think largely the second, largely the latter, and that's not to say that's a bad thing. You know, people want to feel good about their investments, and they want to feel as if, you know, what they're doing reflects their values. You know, there's jobs out there which people wouldn't want to do, basically at any price, and your investments should be the same, I guess. Is that, you know, if you're saying no, I don't want to. You know, if you're anti-gambling, for example, and you say, well, look, you know, if you offered me to work in the casino, even if you give me, you know, twice my current salary, I wouldn't take it because I don't want to be part of the whole gambling scene. And so if that's the way you look at it, then saying, well, I don't want any gambling stocks in my portfolio as well, because I don't care if I'm going to make money from them. It's not worth it to me as a, you know, socially, I don't want to make money from, you know, the misery of others, as some people, you know, might put it. So yeah, so I think it's more about how you're going to feel about your investments rather than you saying, I'm going to have a genuine impact on that. So if you, let's say, you know, using that as a great example, you know, if you're anti-gambling, well, it's almost a bit of the reverse. The worst thing you can, you know, there's a donation, but there's probably donations to causes or giving your time to political causes that are going to prevent gambling. That's one thing. In terms of spending your money on the product, is saying, well, don't spend your money on the product. That's going to have more of an impact. You know, one thing is saying, I'm anti-gambling. I'm not going to won't invest in those companies. Oh, but I will put, you know, $20 or $50 on the Melbourne Cup this year, because, you know, as part of it, saying, well, you know, that's whether you invest that $50 on the Melbourne Cup or not, probably has more of a difference than whether or not you decide to buy, the gambling companies. So I'm not saying it's got zero impact, but I'm saying there's better ways for you and more impactful ways for you to affect you know, what you're trying to do. There is this big issue that I'm by no means against ethical investing. I'm very much for it.
Yeah.
I think it's great for people to do it, but I think sometimes people overestimate their impact.
And sort of
wipe their hands. And it's that main thing, is people wiping their hands and going, yep, I've decided not to invest in gaming companies. I've sorted the problem out. You know?
Yeah, sure.
I've done my part. And it's like, well, no, you haven't. you've done the physical
you've done very little.
Yeah. You've done the physical equivalent of clicking a like button on an Instagram post. And so, you know, if you want to make genuine change, you have to do more than just decide not to invest in those companies.
There's other ways, yeah.
Yeah. And so, by all means, I very much encourage people to tick the button and don't invest in companies that where the profits aren't going to make you feel good. And
Okay. That's cool.
So then we're getting onto this, that investing is not a, so that ethical investing is not a science. And so I've got a chart up, that's just showing that's the, this is comparing ESG scores from two of the major providers. One is the FTSE and the other one is MSCI. So just two big research organizations that put together scoring for individual stocks. Now, each one of those dots on that graph is a score that's been given to a company for one, and a score that's been given. And then on one axis is from one company, and on the other axis is the other company. Now, you'd expect that to be something like a straight line. Like, you'd be able to see this clear correlation, you know, running top left to bottom right, where, one of these companies sits at, you know, this company's in the top 10, the other one might think it's in the top 20, but you know, there's not a lot of difference. You can see from this graph, it's not far off a random scatter. So, and one of the stocks that you could, this was sort of from a few years ago, but one of the stocks that you'd highlight was Tesla. One company had it as the best company. Another one had it as the worst. One of the best. The other one had it as one of the worst. And if I grab the third one, which is Sustainalytics, who's another company that does the same type of stuff, they had it in the middle. And so, you know, the avenues was basically one company was going, well, they're involved in batteries and EVs and all these things that are great for the world. And the other one was like, well, they've got all these, you know, major corporate governance issues and information issues getting out to, you know, customers, and there's related party transactions and all this stuff going on that makes it the worst. And, you know, and the other one put them in the middle. So, you know, the clear message from this is it isn't a science. You got to weigh everything up, and there's any scoring method you get, you know, our own included, you get things like, Google or Alphabet, as it's known as, has, you know, this broad, diverse set of board members, lots of independent people. You know, it's a sort of a textbook type board that you could put together in terms of, you know, getting different people from different avenues and lots of oversight and all that type of stuff. On the flip side, they have this shareholding structure that gives extra votes to the original founders and lets them keep more control. So now, which is more important? And it's hard to tell. So, you know, some people might weight the board higher, some people might weight the shareholding structure higher, the bad shareholding structure higher. And so, you know, do they cancel out? So, it isn't the science. It's a lot of it's about that eye of the beholder. And that's just one more reason why we like to bring it back to letting people choose themselves, let people tick the boxes as to which ones they don't want to see in their portfolio. Okay, so that's sort of the background of it. Now, the big question everyone wants to know is, you know, what does it mean for your portfolio performance? I think the simplest way for me to put it is, if you're going to reduce the number of stocks that you have in your portfolio, then you're going to you're reducing the opportunity set, and so you should expect a lower performance from that. So, the example is, I can invest in 1,600 stocks, the largest 1,600 around the world. If you then tell me, well, I'm only going to give you 800 of those that you're allowed to invest in because I've knocked out the other 800 due to ethical concerns, you're then asking me to go out and perform better than, you know, with one hand tied behind my back. You know, here's only half the stocks I can buy and invest in. So that's the first part. Now that's the bad news. The good news is it actually, you know, as long as you're not knocking out that many stocks, it actually doesn't make that much difference overall. So, I can give you a number of different historical examples of things going in both ways. So I generally try to steer clear too much of the headlines that you'll see saying, you know, ethical stocks, you know, outperformed this year or they underperformed or whatever it is. I've got a chart up, or I can pop a chart up, which just shows that, you know, this is the tobacco stocks over a 10-year period from 2000 and up to 2017, and these stocks roared over that time period. So the performance since then hasn't been that good, but there was this period where if you had an ethical fund which excluded tobacco stocks, then chances are you were underperforming because the rest of the world had tobacco stocks in them and they shot up. Oil and gas makes a huge difference to ethical funds. So there was a period there as oil prices sort of peaked out at sort of over $100 and then pretty much fell pretty consistently from that, that if you were in an ESG fund, you're probably outperforming because you didn't own oil, or you're at least you're quite underweight oil. And then the flip side is when the oil price shot back up again, is that these ESG funds then underperformed. And so you can cherry pick the right time and use these different examples of what it's, you know, of what happens. But I think the key parts for me is saying, you are going to have a lower opportunity set. So you want to make it, but you still want to keep it as large as possible. So if I can take 1,600 stocks and reduce that only to 1,500 stocks rather than knocking out all another 800, because you're only going to take the things out that you really care about, your performance is going to be better than if you just do this blanket, I'll knock out anything that's got the slightest taint of being not ethically aligned with your values. So you quite often find that ethical funds, ethical managed funds that sort of just do a broad-based ones, you might be trying to knock out climate change, for example, but you're also going to, with that, you might also be knocking out animal products and genetically modified agricultural products and nuclear power and things like this that you might actually be positive on. And so, so I guess the broader the opportunities that you can have, the better. As part of that, and just to put that in perspective, so the other thing that matters is how much skill investment managers have. And so some people think they have very little, and so in which case it does doesn't really matter. From that perspective, if you don't think they have any skill, then it's just a random walk. And so do as much ethical as you want, if your assumption is right, then it's not going to affect your performance in any. So over time, it's going to all even out. The flip side is if you do think managers have some skill at least, and we used an example of knocking out about 25% of stocks. So we just ran a bunch of back tests and said, if you assume that you're knocking out random stocks, and managers have some sort of skill, then and you're going to knock out about a quarter of the universe, which is a lot, then the expected returns will be about 0.5% lower over the longer term. But some years you'll outperform, and other years you'll underperform. I think for us, most people knock out far less than that. They knock out sort of 5 or 10% of stocks. And so the expected return is pretty similar to the normal expected return. So that's one part with the ethical portfolio performance. The other part is fees, and don't sleep on the fees. There are a number of ethical managers out there who have fees that I look upon and worry that the fee levels aren't ethical. If somebody wants to charge you 2% plus to run an ethical fund for you, then they don't sound particularly ethical towards their customers and the people that are actually investing with them. So by and large, but a large number of ethical funds, any of the ones that are doing the best of breed and the negative screen, tend to basically say to normal fund managers like myself, here's a set of 1,200 stocks, go and invest in those and get us the best possible return you can. And so if that's what's happening, then to turn around and say, and we're going to charge a much higher fee, for the opportunity to do that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me in terms of how that's put together. And then I've got another chart sort of showing, this is from a study that done by GMO, which was basically looking over quite long time periods. One was from 1957 to 2017. The other one is from 1925, just saying, well, if you knocked out an entire sector, what would the result be? And so, and obviously, knocking out some sectors, you get a better return, and other sectors you get a worse return. So you're going to be, sometimes by knocking out an entire sector, you're going to do better. But keep in mind that I've shown on here that, the worst outcome. So let's say you happen to get the worst possible sector to leave out. Is that you're only talking about, in this case, like about a 0.2% return difference in the actual returns. So that's your worst case, but there's plenty of ones on the upside as well. So I guess the message is there isn't a lot of cost to ethical investment. It's probably a small amount. For most people, I'd say it'll be well less than 0.5%, probably more like 0.1 or lower. So, not quite a rounding error on your overall portfolio impact, but pretty close to it. Although in some years it might be higher or lower. Does that make sense, Sam?
So these funds that are charging the higher fees, you know, around that sort of 2%. What do you think they're doing there? Are they just jumping on the trend of, you know, ethical investing and charging clients more fees?
Well, I was going to say absolutely. Look, maybe some of them have particular issues that it costs them. Maybe they're not that efficient and it costs them lots of money to manage smaller accounts. Maybe that's the case. I do know that there are some of those funds in particular will charge wholesale investors, you know, 0.5% and charge retail investors 2%. And so maybe that's because they're just very inefficient and you know, the cost of dealing with retail investors. But it would seem that that's being nice to them. The flip side is that they know people want ethical and people don't really care. Once you've convinced somebody to buy whatever, you know, you said, okay, I'm not going to buy caged eggs, I'm going to buy free range, you know, maybe they're sort of basically betting on the fact that people don't look as much at the price once they've decided that. So, yeah, I don't know. But certainly I can't see where the costs are myself.
Okay. I think we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And as another example, I guess we don't charge any extra for whether you want to put ethical or not ethical. That's fine. You choose. Knock the socks out. Don't knock them out. Yeah. Same cost either way. There's no skin off our nose. We're doing the investment. We're trying to put together a portfolio of, you know, say on the asset allocation portfolios, it's got about 80, 90 stocks in it. If you decide to come in and knock out 5 of those stocks, it's like, well, I don't care. That's just, we've screened that out. You don't buy those stocks. Everyone else does. There's no difference to me. So we're not going to charge any extra for it. Anyway. So let's talk about those, what some of the different options you can invest in. So I think some of the ones where, there are obviously a range of different ethical managers out there. Most super funds are starting to put in ethical options. There's some exchange traded funds. I've put up a slide up that shows the BetaShares Global Sustainability Leaders ETF and what it excludes. And so, and that's that point that I was making, the saying, yeah, you might go, yes, you know what? I feel strongly about climate change. I don't want any fossil fuels in my portfolio because I want to try and, you know, I don't want to make things worse. But, you know, I gamble every now and again. I'm happy to drink alcohol, you know. I prefer that we didn't have wars and everything like that, but I understand that somebody needs to make weapons and that, you know, it's not a perfect world and that, you know, we do need weapons made of some sort. And maybe you might feel that nuclear energy is a good alternative or a better alternative than carbon. And so with things like the BetaShares and a lot of other managed funds, though, you'll find you don't get that level of nuance. You're either in, you're all in, or you're all out. You either lose all those stocks or you get them all. There's no sort of middle ground. So that's one part. Then you can go to sort of a before I get on to those, well, the other problem with sometimes you've run into with the managed funds where you're basically buying what everyone else has got is you're relying on a fund manager to do to be your conscience for you, and that may or may not be a good thing. Like I'd like to hope that, you know, what we're doing is the right thing, but I can't speak for everyone. What I can say is that, you know, there's a there was a study in 2019, and 8 out of the 10 biggest US sustainable funds were invested in oil and gas companies. So, you know, it's 80% of the biggest US ones were invested in companies that most environmental activists would put down as saying, well, that's, you know, one of the, you know, whether it's certainly in the top few. That you expect. Vanguard had an ETF. They had a social index fund, which is meant to, you know, be excluding companies with significant controversies regarding environmental pollution or severe damage to ecosystems. And there was another one called another fund called Xtrackers, another ESG fund called Xtrackers, with a similar type of thing, and both of them had Occidental Petroleum Group, which, you know, 4 years earlier, had basically paid Peruvian indigenous villagers an amount to settle a suit because it had been contaminating the Amazon. And so there's these things where I guess where I'm trying to get to is, if you're buying a managed, so there are some good managed funds out there. There's some decent ETFs, but they do tend to be all in or all out within that. And you have to rely on the managers sort of running it to assume that they're going to be doing what they think is right is the same as what you think is right. The flip side of then is going to sort of what you call a tailored or a thematic option, where you get an individual share portfolio either through an ethical advisor or through a separately managed account, sort of similar to what we do, where what you get to do is knock in and knock out the stocks that you want or you don't want. So I've got an example of one of that, a screen up there we could show, which is just one of the screens from our sign-on process. We're showing climate change. We've got climate change, war, human rights, health, vices, animal rights, religion, as our key sort of ethical classes. And under the one I've shown there, we've got climate change showing, and you can see that, there's your options. You can knock out the worst offenders for fossil fuels, or you can knock out all fossil fuels, or, if you want to just get rid of people involved in coal seam gas or fracking, do you want nuclear power, don't you want nuclear power, those types of things sort of feed into that, with the idea that it's not a science. Different people have different views on these, and we'd like people to reflect, and other, there's other advisors like us who want people to reflect their own views in their investments. As part of that, we actually have a calculator on the site as well, which you can jump on, and so nucleuswealth.com, just have a look under the resources, and there's an ethical calculator. And I've got another chart showing up here where you can jump in and you can see, put in your own choices, and you can just see where that fits versus others, and whether that be, others of your same age bracket or different, or your gender. So, religion tends to be the least popular of all our, ethical screens. Climate change tends to be the most popular, but then it does vary between groups. We find that a lot of the older investors we have, that war is a bigger concern for them. A lot of the younger investors we have, war isn't as big of a concern. It's more about climate change. And so, I guess that's what we're trying to say is, give it back to let people choose, and certainly jump on and have a look at and see how your own ethics sort of match up with what others are choosing.
So, Damien, as what you're saying with the big fund managers, with some of the big ethical managers, you're sort of bound by their philosophy, and often they're sort of excluding everything because they're perceived to be sort of an ethical fund. Whereas at Nucleus Wealth, you can really sort of tailor the portfolio to your individual sort of values, ethical values and beliefs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And as we're not the only ones. There are other people out there who do the same thing. But it's I guess what I'm saying is most ethical funds you might see in terms of ETFs or managed funds, it's all in or all out. You've either got all their ethical options or none of them. Take your pick. And so in our view, it should be more nuanced than that.
Cool.
So final words. I guess I've got a few. A few final things on ethical investment. I think if you want to make the world a better place, think about different ways to do it first. You're better off doing a donation, buying products, not buying products, whatever it is. That should be your first thing. If you want to make sure your investments don't make the world worse, for mine, I think you're much better off either finding an ethical product where everything lines up the way you want it, or finding a manager out there like Nucleus or someone similar to us that actually lets you customize your ethical choices, so you can knock out the things you don't want but leave in the things where that you feel are fine. I think if you're only knocking out a few, the cost is not going to be much. Don't expect the expected cost. It will vary from year to year. Sometimes you won't have invested in oil and gas stocks and they'll have a boom year. Other times, you won't have invested in oil and gas stocks, and they'll have a trash year. And so, it will vary from year to year, but the net cost over the cycle really shouldn't be very high in terms of knocking them out. And so, we do encourage people, if there's things that you don't feel comfortable about making money from, then knock them out of your portfolio.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Damien. So now we've got our viewer question of the week. So this is for viewers to drop into the comments, have a bit of discussion around the question. So the question for this week is, which method of ethical investment would you choose? So like I said, have a bit of a chat in the comment section. So that almost wraps us up. Damien, thank you for all your insights. It's always insightful. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
We do welcome your feedback on the show, especially in regards to suggestions for future topics. If you do have any ideas, please drop it into the YouTube comments below or send us an email at contact@nucleuswealth.com. Just a reminder, this is general advice and doesn't take into account your personal situation. If you do want to discuss how you can take advantage of the ethical screens or ethical investments in your portfolio, please go to our website at nucleuswealth.com and you can book a call with myself or one of the team at Nucleus Wealth. Thanks again to everyone who's watched this episode. Don't forget to like the video now. And finally, if you know of anyone that might get something out of today's episode, we'd really appreciate it if you please share it with them. If you'd like to see some more of our previous episodes and content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. To stay up to date with news for us, you can follow us on all social media. Thanks again for tuning in. From myself, Damien, and the rest of the team at Nucleus Wealth, we look forward to seeing you at the next episode. Bye for now.